Good morning and welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. I appreciate your patience in waiting. This is a change of panels for this case. And before we begin, I'll introduce our panel briefly. Justice Sue Walker is on my right. And Senior Judge Bill Brigham is on my left. And I'm Ann Gardner. And so with that, I'll ask Megan Polk, our Chief Deputy Clerk, to call the case.
May it please the Court, Mr. Marshall Serkey arguing for appellant, and Mr. Aaron Street arguing for the appellee.
All right, gentlemen, you ready?
I am, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Counsel. Good morning, Your Honor. Marshall Serkey. It's my privilege to represent the Moncriefs. It is also a deep honor to appear before such a learned panel and be surrounded at counsel table by such legal knowledge as I am. We're here today on an interlocutory appeal from an order which granted the special appearance of three defendants in a case brought by Moncrief against Gazprom and others in the 17th District Court. My argument today, I would like to lay out in summary fashion, on the one hand, five essential factual matters that I think are important. And on the other hand, seven principles that I think should govern the court's resolution of this jurisdictional question. Actually, these matters began in 2004, when Moncrief attempts to resolve the ownership issue of its interest in an oil and gas field in Russia by virtue of discussing its participation and ownership rights and interest in a joint venture to develop a regasification facility and cogeneration facility in partnership with Occidental Petroleum in Ingleside, Texas. Regrettably, those discussions don't get very far, and in 2005, a lawsuit is instituted in the Federal District Court here in Fort Worth concerning the ownership rights that were in contest concerning the Russian gas deal. Now, that case involved different parties, different issues, and different claims. And although it's leaned upon heavily by my colleagues on the other side, it has nothing to do with the issues that are here before us today. Those issues, those facts.
May I ask a question?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Did you say that the discussions were ongoing about the Ingleside plant before the lawsuit was brought in federal court?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
That is correct. And they involve an ever-evolving set of confidential proprietary information concerning the operation of the Ingleside facility and the marketing of gas in the Texas Gulf Coast area, not Smolensk or Ryazanov. These matters come to really at an initiation point in terms of this lawsuit in the fall of 2005, when Mr. Moncrief visits in Houston, Texas, not Russia, but in Houston, Texas, with a man named Medvedev, who is a multifaceted commissar of a number of different Russian entities in the Gazprom web of affiliated entities, and a man named Sutherland, who purports to represent, he now says, Gazprom Export as opposed to Gazprom. Now, these are characterized by the other side as settlement talks, as if that made any difference. But why was the Gazprom Export representative and consultant there? It is at these meetings, first in Houston in the fall of 2005, next in Boston, and then finally back in Fort Worth, that Moncrief discloses its confidential information. Forms the very genesis of its claim to Gazprom. That information was then misused by Gazprom. And to close the loop, Gazprom took that information, went to California, had a meeting with a man named Todd Stevens, a very decorated veteran of our armed forces, had a meeting with Mr. Stevens. It was chaired by a rather mysterious character named Boris Ivanov, who, during the course of that meeting, made some rather reprehensible, in my view, reprehensible suggestions to Occidental as to what would happen. Now, that then was the death knell, we said, of our joint venture with Occidental in Ingleside, Texas.
What would happen if what?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, you said Ivanov made...
Well, Ivanov made several suggestions to Mr. Stevens that it would be in the interest of Occidental to discourage the then-ongoing federal litigation that would involve Moncrief and Gazprom, and that $60 million worth of Occidental assets might be at risk if that was not done, and that, as he knew, arms were frequently traded for matters, and these matters could be handled by less than savory methodologies, and it's all contained in the deposition.
I think he said the no-no-nos go away, don't they?
That's correct.
Is that what happened?
Exactly.
Now, let me ask a question. I don't understand. About the ring he was referring to, was that a ring that was involved in the wire fields or what?
No, the ring that he was referring to, Your Honor, was a very distinguished ring, that a piece of jewelry that Mr. Stevens wore as a symbol of his graduation from West Point and his service as a ranger.
How did he take that as a threat?
Well, Mr. Stevens took it as a threat because the man suggested that he knew a great deal about Mr. Stevens' military background that frankly involved details that had no public availability, and that Mr. Ivanov was making it clear that he was privy to that sort of information.
That brings up another question. You mentioned Alexander Medvedev earlier there. Does he hold any office in Russia other than the head person of all these companies?
No, sir. He has a namesake, Mr. Dmitry Medvedev, who is the president of Russia, but that is not the same individual.
All right, thank you.
Now, I have a question. Is it your position then that these contacts you've been discussing support specific jurisdiction based on the tort causes of action alleged?
That is correct.
Okay, and so are you still asserting a general jurisdiction argument?
We are. As to Gazprom UK.
Only as to Gazprom UK.
That is correct. And I probably didn't make that clear enough in the trial court, and I'm now being quoted as having waived that argument in the trial court, and that was not my purpose. As to Gazprom and Gazprom export, it's a specific affiliating nexus. That is, the meetings in Houston and Fort Worth where they secured the confidential information that underlay the wrongdoing that later occurred. Now, with that background, here are the seven principal points I want to make on my argument. First, in the court below, the Gazprom defendants did not negate jurisdiction. The pleaded facts, the uncontradicted evidence, shows that Gazprom and Gazprom Export, as part of a long-standing discussion between they and Moncrief, improperly discovered trade secrets during visits to Houston, Texas, and Fort Worth, Texas, that related to the joint venture between Moncrief and Occidental in Ingleside, Texas. To close the circle, that information, in the most inappropriate manner, was used to interfere with Moncrief's Texas-based joint venture. Those are sufficient minimum contacts They're not immunized under any settlement rhetoric. Because remember, Gazprom was not export. Gazprom export was not even a party to the federal litigation, so they weren't settling anything. And there was no offense to traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice to have this international behemoth come over here and defend itself for those types of activities. That's my first point. Second point is this court, on a de novo review, should hold that those contacts satisfy due process requirements and confer jurisdiction over both of those defendants, Gazprom and Gazprom Export. This case has absolutely nothing to do, except his background, with the prior federal litigation that involved different parties, Severneftie Gas, Sapsib Gas, different claims, claim to ownership in a Russian gas field, and different facts. The third point is, this court should not infer that the trial court somehow made merits-based determinations, i.e., such as the non-existence of a joint venture or the absence of protectable trade secrets that were not even material to, and are certainly not material to, this court's determination as to whether jurisdiction exists. Likewise, the court should not infer any supposed findings of fact that have absolutely, under this court's Glencoe standard, should not infer any supposed findings of fact that have absolutely no support in the evidentiary record, and ignore facts that were proved without contradiction from either Mr. Moncrief or Mr. Stevens, and certainly were not contradicted by Mr. Medvedev or the mysterious Mr. Ivanov. That's my fourth point. The fifth point is, this court should not impose a burden of proof on Moncrief that simply doesn't exist under the law, although, as I would read my esteemed colleague's responses to our pleas to reverse the jurisdictional determination, I would think that I just alighted from a bench trial on the merits of my claim, but this court should not impose a burden upon us that simply doesn't exist on the law. Our burden was to plead a jurisdictional basis for our claim, which we did, and supported by evidence as well. It was their burden to negate, with competent evidence, all of the basis for jurisdiction that we alleged, which they did not do. That's my fifth point. My sixth point is that clearly the testimony of Mr. Hattenberg, the president of the newly established Gazprom USA, which was begun right on the heels of the dismissal of the federal litigation, not too surprisingly, which adopted a business plan according to its public pronouncements that were almost identical to what had been discussed and disclosed by Moncrief during the meetings in Houston and Fort Worth. Under Mr. Hattenberg's testimony, there's no doubt that Gazprom USA is nothing but a mere sham that is fused with Gazprom UK for purposes of determining jurisdiction. And that is a generally affiliating nexus, given their presence in Houston. And my final point, as I see my time lapses, my final point is that if we in fact, which I strongly urge to the court we did not, if we in fact had such a burden as now urged by Gazprom, If we had such a burden, we were entitled to take the depositions of Mr. Medvedev and the mysterious Mr. Ivanov. These two witnesses were not only possibly material, which is the test of jurisdictional discovery, they were not only possibly material, they went to the very heart of our claims. We could have had an explanation then of why Gazprom export representatives were attending so-called settlement meetings of cases that didn't even involve them. Or why, according to Gazprom, it says, do not tell us anything, why there were follow-on meetings after they said that. And those are my points, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Street.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. This court should affirm the district court's orders granting the special appearances. The appellees here are three foreign companies that completely lack the type of purposeful business contacts with Texas that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution requires, as it's been interpreted by this court, the Texas Supreme Court, and the United States Supreme Court. When the relevant facts below are reviewed under the proper standard of review, there can be no doubt that jurisdiction cannot constitutionally be exercised here. I'd like to say a word about the standard of review before getting into the rest of the argument. The legal issue, the ultimate legal issue, whether jurisdiction can be exercised, is of course reviewed de novo. But the crucial jurisdictional facts that are subsidiary to that determination are reviewed under the deferential legal sufficiency and factual sufficiency standard. So if there's more than a scintilla of evidence to support any of the important facts to jurisdiction, those disputes must be resolved in favor of the district court's orders granting the special appearances. So when I go through my argument, I'm going to point out the places in the record that contradict these points that have been given without record citation in the outlines and in the handout that Mr. Searcy gave you. Now, Moncrief alleges specific jurisdiction over Gazprom and Gazprom export and only general as to GMT UK. So I'd like to start with Gazprom and Gazprom export first. Now, Moncrief alleges two claims, trade secrets misappropriation and tortious interference. And I'm going to address those on a claim-by-claim basis for the simple reason that that's what the Texas Supreme Court did in its most recent Kelly decision, and that's what the Fifth Circuit's been doing for several years now. And what that simply means is that a court must address the contacts relevant to each claim and determine whether those contacts relevant to each claim support personal jurisdiction. Courts cannot lump all of the contacts together like Mr. Searcy's done here today and Moncrief's done throughout its briefing without responding to the Kelly case or the Fifth Circuit precedent. Now, as to specific jurisdiction over the trade secrets claim, as you've heard, Moncrief's claim is that Gazprom and Gazprom Export got trade secrets in Texas meetings in 2005. But we have to step back a little bit in time to late 2004 to begin to understand this claim. In late 2004, as Mr. Searcy told you, Moncrief was intensely interested in convincing Gazprom to recognize Moncrief's supposed contractual rights in a Russian natural gas field. And to convince Gazprom to recognize those rights, Moncrief officials went to Washington, D.C. and to Russia in late 2004. And what they did was propose a three-way joint venture in exchange for Gazprom recognizing Moncrief's rights in the YR field. So Moncrief reached out and made this proposal out of Texas as a sweetener. A sweetener were the words that Mr. Moncrief used at 5 CR 893. And under that three-way joint venture, Gazprom would supply LNG from Russia. It would be imported through Occidental's facility at Ingleside, and Moncrief would give Occidental part of the contractual right that would be recognized in the YR field. Now, these are the meetings where the supposed trade secrets were first disclosed, and they were supposed trade secrets relating to the importation of LNG through Texas. And you can see that in the record. We've cited it in our statement of facts. Moncrief admits the trade secrets were first disclosed there. So to begin with, that's where Gazprom got trade secrets, when Moncrief reached out and gave them in an attempt to convince Gazprom to recognize Moncrief's supposed contractual right. Now, Gazprom rejected that proposed three-way joint venture, and that's in Mr. Kvorotov's testimony, and that's in 1357 in the record. Now, it's also important to remember for what we're going to talk about in the next few minutes that Gazprom or Gazprom Export would have been an essential party to any such joint venture to import Russian LNG. And that's for the simple reason that Gazprom or Gazprom Export is the only party with the right to get LNG in Russia. Now, so we have Gazprom rejecting the proposed joint venture. Now what happens is Moncrief files its federal lawsuit almost immediately. And Moncrief says, we had this earlier contract way back in 1999 that gave us a right to own 40% of the field. Now here's where the Texas meetings come in. Gazprom and Gazprom official Mr. Medvedev and Timothy Sutherland, who's acting as a consultant for Gazprom Export, come to Texas for one reason and one reason only, to settle that federal lawsuit that Moncrief had filed. How do we know that's why they came? Well, we can look at Moncrief's complaint. It's live petition before this court and before the district court, page 992 in the record. Gazprom's Mr. Medvedev and Gazprom Export's Timothy Sutherland came to Texas, quote, for settlement negotiations, said two or three times. So Mr. Searcy says, how did Gazprom Export come for settlement negotiations when they weren't a party to the earlier case? Well, that's what Moncrief's own complaint alleges, for one. Two, that's what Gazprom Export's deponent said in the record. Mr. Goncharenko said Gazprom Export officials came for the purpose of settling the lawsuit. Now, and also Mr. Searcy on the record during depositions, I'm going to read you his quote. It's at 7 CR 1339. Mr. Searcy, were these settlement meetings? Quote, these were settlement meetings. They certainly were. So now, just to answer the factual question, first of all, that's more than legally sufficient evidence in the record from Gazprom Export's officials' testimony that that's why Gazprom Export was in the forum. There's no dispute that that's why Gazprom was in the forum. Now, why was Gazprom Export coming? Well, very simply, at some point in the future, Gazprom Export wanted to do business in the United States. And Mr. Sutherland explained at 1308 and 1309 in the record, Mr. Sutherland explained we had to get this lawsuit settled if Gazprom Export was ever going to do business in the U.S. They didn't want to, it was about a $7 billion lawsuit hanging over the parent company's head before a subsidiary explored doing business in the U.S.
What? That's where I'm having a problem. It seems to me that the two are intertwined, the Russian oil field litigation and the Ingleside plant proposals.
Yes, Your Honor, that's absolutely true. The initial proposed joint venture was all intertwined with Moncrief trying to get an interest in the YR field. And that's why we think it's very much about Russia and very much about a Siberian natural gas field. Now, of course, Moncrief takes a very ahistorical view and starts history as if AD 1 were 2005 with the settlement meetings. But the point about the settlement meetings is every court to have addressed the issue says that when Gazprom and Gazprom Export come to the forum for a settlement meeting, that doesn't count as a contact for jurisdictional purposes. And that's for one very simple reason. Foreign companies shouldn't be disincentivized to come to the forum state to settle legal disputes. That would violate public policy. Now, even getting beyond the settlement issue, how did the trade secrets come up in the meeting? On Mr. Searcy's chart and his handout without a citation, he says that, it is actually from Mr. Moncrief's affidavit, he says Gazprom promised that we would keep the secrets confidential and that we somehow lured Moncrief into giving the trade secrets. Well, one, Gazprom already had this information back from Washington, D.C. and Russia. Two, Gazprom had already rejected the joint venture conclusively. It had no more interest in it. And
those two facts that you just stated go to the merits rather than to jurisdiction?
Not at all, Your Honor. I don't mean to confuse that issue. This goes to how the trade secrets came up in the meeting. Was it Gazprom that purposefully availed itself of coming to Texas and tricking Moncrief into giving trade secrets? Or, as the record shows, was it Gazprom coming in for a settlement? And Moncrief, I don't think the trade secrets came up at all. Moncrief didn't add them until its second amended petition. But here's what the record says. Mr. Moncrief himself testified. This is at 5 CR 901. What happened in the settlement meetings, Mr. Moncrief? quote, Gazprom communicated to me that they would be pleased if I would drop all charges in the lawsuit, and then we could have a discussion about the joint venture and these supposed trade secrets. Quote, that's what Gazprom said. They didn't equivocate. So Gazprom only wanted to talk about the settlement issue, and that's confirmed by the testimony of Mr. Sutherland, who was also in that meeting as a consultant for Gazprom Export. And his testimony is at 7 CR 1308 to 09. He says, Mr. Moncrief waived this, waived that, waived this as future opportunities, talking about this joint venture that had already been rejected and the supposed trade secrets. And I'm quoting again here, and Medvedev was very clear to say, before we can have a conversation about anything, we need to settle this lawsuit. So to the extent trade secrets came up at all in Texas, they came up over Gazprom's objection, and Moncrief unilaterally brought them up. Now, we know from the last 50 years of personal jurisdiction case law that what a plaintiff unilaterally does in Texas doesn't count as purposeful availment by the defendant. And this court, of course, has said that as recently as the Gordon and Doner case back in 2009. So to sum up, there are three reasons why there can't be jurisdiction over the trade secrets claim. One, Gazprom, if it obtained any trade secrets at all, it obtained them only in Washington, D.C. and Russia. It obtained them first in Washington, D.C. and Russia. And it didn't use trade secrets in Texas. At most, Moncrief has alleged that GMT USA, it's Gazprom's fifth-tier subsidiary, used the trade secrets. But it hasn't made any attempt to attribute those contacts all the way up the chain to Gazprom and Gazprom Export. Now, we haven't seen a single case, and Moncrief certainly hasn't cited a single case, where a foreign defendant neither obtained trade secrets for the first time in Texas nor used the trade secrets in Texas. They've cited three cases where it says the defendant purposefully came to Texas with an intent to get trade secrets, and that there was jurisdiction over that, not where it was neither obtained nor used in Texas. Second, just again to sum up, Gazprom entered the forum for settlement meetings. And third, at those settlement meetings, Moncrief, if it disclosed trade secrets at all, unilaterally disclosed them. Now I'd like to move on to the tortious interference claim. And as Mr. Searcy said, that arises out of a 2006 meeting in California. Gazprom and Gazprom Export officials supposedly came to California and met with Occidental, which is a California corporation. And Moncrief says that something that happened in that meeting somehow interfered with a joint venture between Moncrief and Occidental. Now, that claim fails both as a matter of law, even if you accept everything that Moncrief just told you, and it also fails factually because what Moncrief just told you is not supported in the record. First of all, it fails as a matter of law. The Supreme Court's decision in January 2010 in Kelly says that a foreign company's acts outside of Texas that merely cause effects in Texas are not sufficient for personal jurisdiction. That case was a fraud allegedly committed that allegedly harmed a Texas venture and a Texas resident who was constructing a Texas hotel. So it couldn't be more on point here. And the Supreme Court said, Court of Appeals, you were wrong because you held that it was enough to cause effects purposefully in Texas. And what did the court say the test was? The court said the test was, were there any tortious acts committed in Texas? Well, here there's not. There's a supposed tort in California. And the court suggested there might be something else that could be done, sort of the general standard. What's the general standard for purposeful attainment? Well, we can see that in Rotamco. It's not enough to direct a tort into the state. Did the defendant reach out and establish a purposeful business relationship with Texas or a Texas resident? In Rotamco, even though the defendant never entered the state, what happened? He took fraudulent transfer of Texas real property, and then he sold that real property. And the court said, even though the defendant didn't enter the state, he purposefully availed himself by making that business relationship. We do not have that here, Your Honors. Gazprom refused to do business with Moncrief. Gazprom never contracted with Moncrief to do anything. Gazprom never contracted with Occidental to do anything. Now, as to the joint venture that Mr. Searcy said existed with Occidental, what we have in the record is that Gazprom rejected a joint venture. And then we have testimony from Mr. Moncrief himself that there was no joint venture, and I can give you that quote. And there's also testimony from Mr. Stevens that there was also no joint venture finalized. Here's what Mr. Moncrief said, and I'm quoting from page 891. We were never able to bring Gazprom to the table, so we didn't get into worrying about the joint venture agreement. That made perfect sense because Gazprom was the only party that could supply the LNG to the joint venture. So by the time of these meetings in 2006, Moncrief had no possibility of any joint venture with anybody. So whatever Gazprom did in the supposed California meeting didn't have any effects in Texas. And I'm saying effects is not enough. But even if you accept their defective legal theory, there's no factual basis even for any effects in Texas. Now, Mr. Searcy, it's amazing to me, in the handout, he's quoting Ivanov, Mr. Ivanov, talking about KGB and arms dealing and all that. But he doesn't quote anything having to do anything with a joint venture in Texas. It's all, as Mr. Searcy admitted, it's all supposedly discouraging Occidental from testifying in the federal litigation. Well, at most, again, that's an effect in Texas. And two, it has nothing to do with the claim that they pleaded, which is tortious interference with the joint venture. Quickly, as to GMT UK and general jurisdiction, I'd encourage the court to look at volume 4 of the reporter's record, page 60. Mr. Searcy, we're not claiming general jurisdiction here. Didn't brief the issue one iota in the district court. Tried to say that they did, but the only cite from the district court record was saying there are two types of personal jurisdiction, general and specific. And we'll stand on our briefs on the fact that even if they didn't waive it, there's ample testimony in the record from both GMT UK and GMT USA that the companies are not alter egos.
Could you briefly address the deposition issue?
Certainly, Your Honor. What we have is Moncrief wishes to take depositions of Mr. Medvedev and Mr. Ivanov. Mr. Medvedev attended the Texas meetings. Mr. Ivanov attended the California meetings. They've never explained what more those witnesses could tell that hasn't already been told by the multiple attendees at that meeting, including Mr. Moncrief himself attended the Texas meetings. What else could be jurisdictionally revealed by that testimony? As the California meeting, the Moncrief got the testimony of two Occidental employees who were there, Stevens and Olson, and Mr. Sutherland, who was there as a consultant on behalf of Gazprom Export. And they hinted a little bit around the argument in the district court that maybe it was unclear which parties were being represented. And maybe it wasn't clear as to Gazprom and Gazprom Export. But as the case comes before this court, the issue is that Gazprom and Gazprom Export were represented at both of the meetings. So there's no testimony that could be material on that point. The only other thing I heard Mr. Searcy say is that why was Gazprom Export there in the Texas meetings when it had no case to settle? And I hope I've already explained that convincingly to the court, and I'd be happy to address any more specific questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Searcy?
Your Honor, as I listened to my colleague argue, I was reminded of someone, a blind man describing an elephant and the different parts of an elephant. And that's what's really happening here is we're trying to disassemble what actually occurred to isolate things and pretend that there wasn't a tort committed within the state of Texas against my client. The facts are simple. They came here in 2005. Had extended discussions in Houston about the Ingleside facility. Now, they say it was settlement. Under the Bernstein case, as we've cited to the court in our briefs, that doesn't make any difference if you're doing bad things. Secondly, if they say that that's where the matter concluded, why did the ever-present Mr. Sutherland come back to Fort Worth within a few days and discuss the Ingleside venture? According to them, he wasn't from Gazprom, he was from Gazprom Export, who wasn't even a party to any litigation in the United States. He comes to Fort Worth and visits extensively about information concerning the Ingleside facility. Now, this isn't information that was discussed with Kira Vortov nor Riazanov in Washington in 2004. This is new, updated information in 2005. So that's kind of a disjoinder from the tortious activities that occurs. And then to suggest that our whole theory is based upon California activities directed back towards Texas and use the Kelly case as some kind of indicia. And we all know that Kelly concerned the construction of a hotel in Houston, a California resident who had no contact with the state of Texas other than to send affidavits into Texas. Here, Gazprom's representatives come into Texas, get our confidential information, go out to California, interfere with our contractual relationships, and believe me, according to the testimony of Mr. Stevens and Mr. Moncrief, there was an existing joint venture between these two entities, if that merits-based determination was at issue here, which it is not. They then take our information, go to California, and purposefully interfere with a Texas-based operation. Now, I can't think of any more affiliating nexus with the state of Texas. This is the very hub of all the activity. And then to top it all off, they start a Houston-based subsidiary almost on the heels of the conclusion of the federal litigation that mirrors the operations in Texas. So this is a case where there was purposeful availment of the benefits and protections of our law. And what I'm hearing basically is it's almost an argument as if there were an automobile accident out here at the corner of Commerce and Main, or excuse me, of Main and 2nd Street that involved a driver from a foreign country, and they somehow got a jurisdictional determination granting a special appearance, and then they come up on appeal and argue to this court, well, the trial court must have found no negligence, therefore there was no tort, therefore there's no jurisdiction. Well, it's just not, it does not work out. Due process is satisfied here, and I just respectfully request that my client be given the entry to the courthouse to have his day in court and receive his due process. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Searcy. Thank you, Mr. Street. Thank you, all gentlemen and two former chief justices. It's quite an honor to have both of you in our courts. We appreciate your patience in waiting till 10:30 for your arguments. Your case is submitted, and we will adjourn.
Thank you, Your Honor.